Dr. Al-Sirreel 1, you started your military service the beginning of 1915. How exactly did you come to get into the Royal Army Medical Corps?
Well, I was kept at the hospital because two of my friends who were on the staff of the Norfolk and Norwich Hospital had left for the army, and they only left three of us. And I was a senior one, and they couldn't let me go. But eventually, a surgeon from Netley, from Norwich, was forming a hospital at Netley, made up of huts. And he asked me if I'd join them.
I see.
And it was then that I applied to go into the RAMC and join him at Netley mm-hmm. Hut. Hospital.
Yes. When you got to Netley in the beginning of 1915, how was the hospital set up and organized? Tell me as much as you can remember about it.
Well, first of all, they were only building the huts at the time, and we lived and slept in a hotel in Southampton, and we used to go over every morning and help with the general hospital. And that took about three more weeks to complete, and then we had our huts built, and each hut became a ward.
There was already a well-established medical hospital at Netley.
It had been a military hospital for many years, and they were building about 50 or 80 huts on to accommodate more wounded, which were taken over by this surgeon from Norwich, and the rest of us joined him to help, and we each had a hut to ourselves, which became very much like a hospital ward.
So the huts were in effect a part of the wartime expansion of the hospital.
Yes.
Yes.
We had our meals in the general hospital, and
How many of these huts were there?
Well, I should say about 80. Which contained about 30 men each.
Yes. Presumably, you required quite a lot of additional medical staff, as well as the additional buildings.
Oh, yes, indeed. Orderlies, nurses, fully equipped hospital staff, like in a general hospital.
Yes. Where did this additional staff come from? The additional medical staff that was necessary to cope with the wartime expansion of
the hospital. Well, there were people who volunteered recruiting for the RAMC, and they were sent down as orderlies, and nurses recruited themselves too.
Mm-hmm. Were there any particular medical people that you remember who joined the staff like yourself at the beginning of the war?
I remember many of them, but I can't remember their names.
Mm-hmm.
There were about 30 patients in each hut, and each hut was one medical officer that looked after a hut, like when in the hospital one looked after a ward. And my ward consisted of officers, wounded officers.
One of the things that one hears and reads a certain amount about is the problem of self-inflicted wounds. When you were working at Netley, were there among the patients any whom you expected of having self-inflicted wounds?
Yes, there were. At first, we found wounds were healing very well. In certain cases, a wound that was almost healed, the next day we looked at it, it was all inflamed again and enlarged. After a time, the sister and I came to the conclusion they were doing this themselves to prolong their stay in hospital, because they'd had a real pasting at the beginning of the war, and they didn't like it one little bit, and they didn't want to go back again. And so we agreed between us not to report this at all. We just said, what we'll do, we'll put a plaster dressing over this thing and it'll heal. they couldn't get at it then, and you found if you did that and kept it on a week, the thing was perfectly healed.
Did you give the patients who were doing this any hint that you suspected
no,
what they were up to?
No, we didn't like to. We didn't like to, because they weren't cowardly fellows at all. They were just shocked patients from a terrible Mons.
Were there any other kinds of self-inflicted wounds you remember?
Well, the first hut I had was occupied by Sikhs, and they all had wounds through the palms of their hands. And we thought, this is very extraordinary. The only part of their body that was exposed to the enemy was the palm of their hands. We came to the conclusion they must have held their hands up above the trench so that they could be shot through the hand and get invalided home. And that was obviously what had occurred. But never any charge was brought against them, of course. But we formed our own opinion that it must have been that.
What number of Indian patients had these hand wounds?
Well, there were 30 in my ward, and they all had hand wounds.
Yes.
All through the palm of the hand. And the conclusion was pretty obvious that they had been putting their hands up to be shot at.
Amongst the war wounded you were treating at Netley, what was the general physical and mental condition of the patients that you had to treat?
Well, the mental condition was a condition varying between depression and relief at being out of the thing altogether. They were frightened, they were timid, they didn't want to go back again anymore at the war, and very thankful to be in these sort of surroundings. In fact, when I said to one of them, I want to get out to the front to experience, he said, you want to get out to the front, you must be bloody mad. And that gave me an inkling that things weren't very pleasant out there.
Did the patients talk much about the war and about their war experiences?
Oh, yes, quite freely. Because we were doctors looking after them. They wanted to unload there. I don't think they talked to their friends who visited them about it much, but they did talk to us as doctors. Mm-hmm. It's a psychological effect, you know, giving to a doctor their stress that they could express to a doctor that they couldn't express to an ordinary civilian, their mothers or sisters or brothers.
Mm. Was there much evidence that the war had a very adverse effect on patients' nerves? Did you find many in a nervous condition?
Oh, yes.
Can you remember any examples? Any particular cases which stand out in your mind?
I don't think I can, really.
Now, you went out to France in the autumn of 1915, and you worked with the 9th Border Regiment in the trenches in the Albert area. Mm. Can we talk a bit about how the medical services for the fighting forces in France were organized, starting off with the smallest of the medical units, that which served in the front line? What was its function?
Well, the function in the front line was to pick up people immediately they were wounded and put on a first aid dressing or give them morphia or whatever assistance you could give them. And from there, they were picked up by the field ambulance who could come up any time of day or night because they had the Red Cross flag on them. And that was the Geneva Convention, never fired or supposed to never fire on anything marked with the Red Cross, hospitals or field ambulances or clearing stations. Mm. So they could come up any time, day or night, to pick up the wound after we'd given first aid. Of course, I always feel that the medical officer was really wasted in the trenches, except from a point of morale. The men liked having a medical officer with them. They felt they could do something wonderful to them if they were wounded, you see. But really, looking back on it, it was aid man could have done anything that a medical officer could do, and it wasted a lot of lives because there were a lot of deaths among medical officers in the trenches in the front line, and they were rather a waste of medical staff because they really hadn't anything to do with an ordinary trained man in first aid could do.
Yes. Now, after the field ambulance unit had taken over patients which you had passed to them, they were taken to casualty clearing stations.
Well, after being attended, I mean, fractures were put up in plaster and so on, casts, before they were put on, and wounds dressed and cleaned up and all that sort of thing. And then they were taken over by ambulance to a casualty clearing station, which might have been 5 or 6 miles away behind the line.
Now, exactly what was the job of the casualty clearing station?
Well, I never worked in one, but I presume the job that they could do major operations there if necessary, if they were urgent cases. Otherwise, they passed them on to a base hospital.
Apart from treatment, did the casualty clearing station have any other task?
Yes, indeed. They sorted them out to a certain extent. They decided whether they were fit to go home or to... even fit to go back to their fighting units again. They sorted the things out, really, and they could do major operations there as well before they passed them on. But if they were very serious major operations, they'd pass them, if possible, if they were possibly fit, pass them back to a general hospital in France.
I see.
Or if they were very much fitter still, ship them over to England, where they must prefer to be, of course.
Now, you had quite a bit of experience as a civilian doctor in a major hospital at Norwich before the war, and so you were used to quite high standards of medical care and treatment.
Yes.
How did you find the medical care and a treatment that forces in France received compared with your civilian experiences? What were the standards like? How did they compare?
Well, there was no comparison, really, between being an officer in the first line of trenches during a battle and being in a general hospital where one had an operating theatre ready and prepared and a patient prepared. There was really no comparison between the two.
No, that wasn't really the point I was driving at. I was thinking of the medical care and services from the patient's point of view and wondering whether the kind of service, the kind of medical care and treatment, the standard of it, which the frontline soldier could expect if he were wounded in France, how that treatment compared in its excellence or lack of excellence with the sort of pre-war civilian medical standards you were used to.
Well, once they got back to a general hospital, it was excellent. And the great thing was to get them back as quickly as possible. Get them out of the trench, get them back to the field ambulance who'd do a first aid treatment on them, or even plaster them up or minor operations on them. Then they'd, quickly as possible, they'd move them back to the...
Casualty clearing station?
Yes. And then they'd sort them out, whether they would go to a general hospital in France or in England, or even fit enough to go back to active service again.
Now, I'd like to go on and talk to you about how you personally organized and set up your own medical unit in the front line trench, which was the first job that you actually had, and you were working basically as the regimental medical officer. First of all, what was the size of your particular medical unit?
I had a sergeant, and I had a corporal, and I had 12 stretcher bearers, three allotted to each company, and there were four companies, so they gave me 12 stretcher bearers to call upon in an emergency. During the time in the trenches, they spent their time with the company, each one, three to a company, And if in a battle was raging furiously and a lot of people were being killed, then I called them all together and I had a first aid post in a dugout just behind the trenches where they used to, the stretcher bearers went out and sought for people who were lying and couldn't get in themselves and brought them into the first aid post where we did all the dressing we could do. And then we got in touch with the ambulance, telling them we had these cases, and they came up immediately.
I see. Yes. To concentrate your attention for a moment on the actual first aid post that you set up there. Can you picture it in your mind's eye and describe it to me, how it was organized, what size it was, things like that?
It was just an ordinary dugout, like one slept in at night. It was, we had all our 12 stretchers in there, for instance, that the men could go out with. Two men would carry a stretcher and bring the people in, and they only went out if I wanted them to go out. I went out and saw if there were a lot of people lying about dying or badly wounded. Then I called on the stretcher bearers to come out and collect them and